Yesterday was my spiritual teacher's birthday, 25th May, 1915, I think he was born in. He passed away at the age of 92. And the first project I worked with him on was a book called The Ultimate Understanding, which was for me quite difficult to understand because I was new to the subject. But what I really liked was he had written a letter to God. He was 84 then. When I met him, he was 83 or 84. And that letter to God is what touched my heart. So I requested him, I said, is it okay if we include this at the end of the book? And he said, sure. So I'd like to read that letter out to y'all, because for me that was a very transforming aspect of the teaching being lived, not just when it came to writing books and reading books, but a life lived through this teaching from someone who was 83 or 84 at that time. And what is the expression of that life? Dear God, this is my record of eternal gratitude to you. This can actually be the end of the prayer because it says it all. It's just the first line. Because it is said that the only true prayer is the prayer of gratitude. You gave me birth in a most respected Hindu family, but not high enough in social status to make me proud. You gave me a physical form well admired for its perfection, but it was small enough to keep me humble. You gave me education high enough to be most useful in life, but not high enough to make me proud. You gave me success in sports high enough to be satisfied, but not proud. You gave me a career in which you took me high enough to be admired, but not high enough to make me arrogant. You gave me a wife and family for which I have always been eternally grateful, but you did not spare me some grief to remind me not to forget what life is all about and to be always grateful for what I do have. You did not forget to place an adequate number of temptations in my way so that I may not be too critical of others who have to face their own temptations. I am now 84, and perhaps the only wish that remains is that the long life you have given me will not carry a burden at the end. But in that case, I know you will also give me the necessary courage to go with it. You gave me a lot to show me how little is needed to be content and to show me how much could be given away. And undoubtedly, the most important of all, as if the bounty you have showered on me were not enough, you crowned your achievement by using this psychosomatic apparatus to convey to the world the most important message of Advaita. Truly I am blessed, or indeed, my beloved, have you not blessed yourself? Finally, it occurs to me, if you were to design for yourself a life in phenomenality, could it have been much different from this one? And for this thought, no tears are enough to wash your noumenal feet. Because the story of all our lives are the same. Fundamentally, everyone sees ups and downs, losses and gains, because that is the design of life. That is what he is trying to point to throughout this letter to God. He was a bodybuilding champion, state level, but yet he was short. He went to the London School of Economics, but yet he never excelled in that sense. So this is what he was trying to point to throughout the letter. When he says, you gave me a wife and family for which I have always been grateful, but you did not spare me some grief to remind me not to forget what life is all about and to be grateful for what I have. He lost a son. But how many of us are grateful for what God has given us? Or is our life a living complaint every day? I'm not happy with my job, my family. There are two prayers which perhaps are the most sacred. One is the prayer of gratitude, and the other, which comes from this book called A Course in Miracles, which is to pray for the release of all fear-based thoughts. Because you will be quite surprised if you look at all the thoughts which come up during the day, 99% will be fear-based thoughts. What will happen to me? 99% is fear-based thoughts. And can you try to remove your fear-based thoughts? You can't. That is what surrender is. Dear Lord, please help me release my fear-based thoughts. And the outcome of both is peace of mind. Either it's fear of the other or it's the fear of God. But the pivot is fear. So what this teaching does is it dissolves fear-based thinking, which is always going into a dead past or an imaginary future. That is where fear gets its fuel from. It's identification. This happened to me in the past. This might happen to me in the future. The hold and the grip of the me, which the me is willing to give up when it goes to sleep. We have no problem in going to sleep. Isn't that an irony? With full confidence that we will wake up the next day. Where did that come from? And where did that confidence go in the waking state? The burden of fear is the burden we carry. Not out of choice, because that has been the design of life since we were young children. Mistrust walked in and trust walked away from us because we became afraid, because we started losing things in our life while we were growing up. And we didn't want to keep losing. That is why Ramesh would say, always consider your glass half full and not half empty. Because you must trust that if God has brought you so far, why do you think He would drop you here? Hasn't He brought you so far? What do you say? Have you come from Nagpur? You flew down or took a train, or how does one come?
Yeah,
this morning?
No, yesterday.
Okay. So what brings you here?
It brings me
here. Mm-hmm.
Actually, I just want to know, I just want to meet with you. How the enlightened person could see. I just want to know that, I don't know, I watch your video on YouTube and it touched my heart. Whenever I feel to do meditations, I just start your video and just watching and listening to your teaching and
being
like the teaching
it works on. That's nice. Or maybe you get so bored that you fall off to sleep. This is called love. Not a person-to-person love. Consciousness has heard its own voice. That is what has brought you here. It has got nothing to do with me as a person. You have heard something, sensed something and felt something which was so intimate to you that it took you to a very deep place. That deep place where the thinking mind has no role to play. And that is what has brought you here.
Because I feel I'm very eager to know myself. I'm very much eager. Daily whenever I wake up in the morning, I say, how could I know myself? 2 days before, when I wake in the morning, I thought that when I was in sleep, I was in touch with, I'm with me. When I wake up, I think in my mind, again I have to play the drama. Again I have to go in the world. I think I was in very peace when I was in my sleep. When I wake up, I thought, again I have to go and do this and that. I don't want to do all this thing. I want to go in being in me. It is very peace inside.
But see, that is precisely the point. That peace does not go anywhere.
No, but I don't want to, I cannot hold that peace, because whenever I go out in my clinic and anywhere else, it's distracted somewhere else. I try again catch it once, but again it gets distracted.
But that is the nature of living. That is the nature of life and living. Sri Aurobindo said that it cannot be that the spiritual evolution happens only through meditation, because meditation is an internal journey, but life is even the external, and therefore the work becomes the meditation. You cannot have it only as an internal journey, because daily living is about working, being engaged. The point is that engagement total engagement in the working mind, or is it distracted by the thinking mind? That is the difference, because then daily living itself is also a meditation. Your daily living itself becomes a meditation. It must be integrated. But yes, because you have tasted the peace, the natural wish is that it permeates through daily living. But that cannot happen if you want to disconnect from daily living and just be with yourself and be with the peace which you feel when you sit at home or in meditation. They must merge, because your life is one expression from birth to death. It's not splintered into when I work, when I'm at home, when I'm in meditation. And I think it was Satya Sai Baba, I'm not sure who said, that true meditation is the living understanding that God exists at all times. Means the total acceptance of what is, including something you may not like. The total acceptance of God's will, the total acceptance of people the way God has made them, the total acceptance of yourself the way God has made you.
How could we know about ourselves? How could we, in our journey to know about ourselves, how could we analyze where the path is get blockages, where could we analyze ourselves to know the truth? How could we say that where the journey get blocked, and what our behavior, what is the internal blockages, and what we could say the behavior or thoughts or thinking mind, how could we know that where is journey is our stop?
There is only one measure, by the degree of peace that you feel. There is no other criteria. And it is the job of the thinking mind to take one away from that peace. That is what the thinking mind is very good at. The thinking mind, which is the ego based on a sense of doership. The moments of deep peace that you feel is something to be so grateful for, because many people don't feel that. But the mind has already gone into the zone of the moments when I don't feel at peace. That is the nature of the thinking mind, to ask questions after questions after questions. That is why I say thank God for your sleep, and people think I'm saying something quite foolish, but thank God for your sleep, because that is a gift of peace which God has given you. We don't thank God for our sleep. There are so many people who don't sleep, because their thinking mind is so active. This happened to me. This is the story of my life. Why did God do this to me? What have I done wrong to God? Why is this person behaving in this way? What is the society thinking of me? I have been a failure at work. Why was I a failure? I put in my best. I should not have been a failure. That is the drama of the thinking mind, which makes one lose peace and lose sleep. The me keeps coming back through the back door. The thinking mind reasserts itself through this process. And all that is needed is witnessing of the mechanics of the thinking mind. not of wanting it to be less, because that creates frustration. Just simply witnessing that, oh, I have this preference that my thinking mind is not engaged, because when it is not, I am at peace. That is enough. But to wish a certain condition away is not going to make it go away, as we all know. It is a sincere wish, no doubt. It is a voice from the heart. Now one has to trust the force of life to make it happen. Did you choose to experience the moments of peace that you did when you watched the videos? Was it a choice? So it was the absence of the person who thought he had a choice which resulted in those experiences of peace. Was it in your control? So then, is there any point trying to control the times when one is not at peace? Why not trust that same force which made you feel what you felt in the heart to do the rest of the job? And it will. There is no going back. You cannot walk backwards on the spiritual journey. You know why? Because you're not going forward. You're going home. You are going home. Can you ever forget your name in this life? Can you forget that my name is Ramakant, because you know it? Can you forget your home once you know your home? You may think you might not find the way back, which is the thinking mind. So just trust that force which is far greater than the puny human intellect and ego with its sense of doership. Trust that it will take you home. And taking you home means nothing but the annihilation of the thinking mind. It is not a destination. It is where you already are. The baby up to the age of 2, when the ego starts forming, does not have the burden of memory. We are all carrying on our shoulders the burden of memory. This happened to me. This is my sad and sorry life story. But that pure joy, pure being, the child Krishna, the baby Krishna, did not carry that burden. That happened through the process of life and living. So going home means picking up that burden and putting it down. And then one is left with the peace of being, not being this or that, not wearing masks, but simply being. But we are so busy being at war with ourselves and with others, with our life situations, our life circumstances, people we don't like, that the simple joy and peace of being gets overlooked. Is someone else here from out of Bombay? Where have you come from? Okay. That's for the recording. What's your name?
Kranti.
That's not a compliment.
I mean, your voice and everything, like, okay, I'm daily here. It's only that physical body is right now. I'm a friend of Ignatius Sangeeta.
Okay.
Experiencing and being part of the
Has it made life simpler?
That's what.
Like I say, this teaching doesn't make life easier, but it makes it simpler.
And there's no burden on me right now, so I don't have anything to be angry or some grudges. I'm so free. Liberated.
That's great.
Even in this life, what? I did not want to do this. To Nisargadatta Maharaj, I am that, and Durga Mahesh, I am everything in consciousness.
You know, someone who's not a fan of Ramana Maharshi and Isardatta Maharaj. I don't know if I said this in one talk. She said, I don't understand these two guys, yeah. One says, who am I? The other says, I am that. And Ramesh would say, of course, his main phrase was, all there is consciousness. But he would say, while Maharaj says, I am that, living that means that is me, you, he and she. We are all instruments of that. We all come with our specific conditioning, what was given to us by life, our surroundings, our circumstances, our education, our religion. We have all been shaped by that conditioning, and we all come with our innate nature, our genetics, the way we have been programmed, through which we take life's decisions. So we are all instruments just like the gadgets in the kitchen. Each one is programmed to bring about what it is designed to bring about. But what happens here in our lives, we want the toaster to produce juice. We want the microwave to act as a fridge. That is how we want people to be, the way we want them to be, not the way that the divine has designed them. No, you should not be this way. You should be this way. I should not think like that. I should have thought like that. And then the conflicts and the battles and the wars start with the world and ourselves within. Hatred, condemnation, blame, guilt, which is a very big thing, shame, malice, jealousy, envy, arrogance and pride. Why? Because either someone did something or we did something, or either someone didn't do something or we didn't do something. I was not good enough. How could I have done that? The motive for everything is love, but it has got covered by all this. We need to let the love be. We don't leave the love to be love. That is why Maharaj said, life is love and love is life.
In that letter, he said, indeed you blessed yourself. Transcendent and separation.
Yes, because there is no other, right? If you are an instrument of the divine and you live that way, where is the separation between the divine and yourself? It is not coming from an egoic position. Someone had told Meher Baba, what is this nonsense? Everywhere you go running around saying, I am the avatar, I am the avatar. And Meher Baba, who has written a book called God Speaks about all the levels of consciousness which were experienced by him through his process of spiritual awakening, was asked this question. And his answer was very simple. He said, you know you are a man. The man said, yes, I am a man. So he said, I know I am the avatar. Because I know it. I have experienced the states of Godhood. But see, we, when we see this as an individual, we superimpose that on others. How can he say that? How dare he say that? That is what we start doing. Because we see everything as separate, as a subject-object relationship. That is what happens. We split everything and then it becomes a judgment on the other. He was not forcing someone else to follow him or anything. He just said, I know what it means. What is that state of consciousness? What it means? That's it. But we are so busy because we carry with us this whole stack of labels, those self-adhesive labels, we start sticking it on everyone's foreheads that we meet, that this person is this, this person is this, this person is, Anoop is mean, Dipesh is jealous, Jigar is naughty, and all these labels, we see everyone with labels, we have decided who they represent and what they represent to us and stuck labels on everyone's foreheads. And then we wear this mask and we start interacting with these various forms. You were saying something?
The same reference actually, I was just going to Ramesh's book on everything that is consciousness. And there were a few questions in that. And that question is always been there in my mind. So when we are talking about, he's talking about the consciousness that rests in consciousness. So if I'm disidentifying myself with mind, but still I'm a mind body organism, is it possible for me to be in the form and experience that which is beyond consciousness? Consciousness again, it will be linked to that identity. So, as you gave an example of Meher Baba, that's what. But this was like, you know, there are so many gurus who have, you know, experienced that. I still don't know, it is intellectual for me right now. So, this was like to know, is it possible to be in the form and just experience that?
But haven't they all been in their forms?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, what exactly might be that experience? Is it.
It's not a silly question, but you see, this also points to something which is the new trend which I have seen happening in the circles of non-duality and Advaita, that one must transcend the person. You see, because if one is living as a person, where is the question of transcending the person? Someone wrote me a mail 2 days ago saying that one of her parents is ailing. And it's painful to watch an ailing parent. Okay. So then she saw some video somewhere which said that if you are really on the path of non-duality and Advaita, then this you should not be affected. Because if you have lost your personhood, you should not be affected and you should be calm and sit comfortably and accept this is all God's will. But please, we are all human beings, we are not zombies here, right? We are made to feel. So obviously, if your parent is ailing and there's not much you can do about it, you will feel pain too. That is the human experience. But with the understanding that this is God's will, this was meant to happen, I have done my best in terms of care and looking after. Beyond that, I can't do much. What happens is that the pain is accepted totally. The additional drama of my God, why did this happen to me? Why did God do this to me? What will I do now? That is erased. And this is the same for the sage as well as for the ordinary person. This fact that life will bring these painful moments. But what the ordinary person does is he gets involved in his pain and makes it my pain. Whereas the sage sees pain in the moment as pain in the moment. That is the difference. So to be in some transcendental state of losing the personhood and all is not going to happen. Because it's, you know your love when you feel pain. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't there love behind the pain you feel? How would you know that? Why? Because you feel it's happening to you. Someone else's pain is your pain. Isn't that love? So we needn't aspire for those heights, for those states of consciousness or samadhi or whatever. But the bedrock of one's daily living being peace. And on that bedrock, build whatever you have to. That is it. Your gift to the world is the gift of peace. And when you don't judge someone, you are gifting peace. When you don't judge yourself, you are gifting peace. Just take that.
As you mentioned sometime that we judge people and we label people, that this is jealous, this is mean, and different kind of labels to different persons. So, being in this spiritual journey, it happens so, reading these talks and reading books, that intellectually I know it's all are the instrument of God and it's just a possibility that is in a way. But they may behave that way. Somebody may behave mean, somebody may behave selfishly. So actually they are behaving through that condition that they. Although we may not label it, but we will have to deal with them according to what they do. So,
Of course, you have to do exactly what you feel and think you should do in that situation, in that relationship. But when your overriding thought is that this person is precisely the way they have been made by God, that removes the sting in the relationship. That finger pointing stops. Then you do what you need to do. If you have to express your point of view, you have to express your point of view. And the usual mechanics of daily living take over. But you will not go to sleep thinking that this person is like this, this person did this to me. That dialogue is erased. And that is when an intellectual understanding has sunk into the heart. Because over time you see this, that let's say 2 years ago, 3 years ago, my whole life story was about all this labeling, hating, judging people, and now I don't do it anymore. I'm still facing situations, relationships at work, at home, with friends, but that part of the dialogue has dropped. That is when you know the teaching has gone into the heart.
So in that case, if suppose a situation demands or a behavior of that person demands that I have to be angry in that situation, so that is okay.
See, if anger arises, that is okay. Anger in the moment. But what we do is we hold on to that anger and we make a story out of it. And then we say it is I got angry at so and so person. I should not have got angry. Anger may arise. Like, we are human. There may be a situation where we flare up. But if we are so invested in the anger, we may not even want to go and apologize to the person later and say, look, I'm really sorry if I hurt you. Many people can't do that because they are so invested in the anger that, my God, I got angry with this person. Now I can't say anything. I'm not going to apologize. Why should I apologize? I was right. The other person was wrong. But if you felt that, no, this person might have got hurt by what I said, anger in the moment would mean next moment you could have a laugh with that person, crack a joke, be normal, and say, look, I'm really sorry if this happened, but I had no control over it. But we make that anger into a story and we drag it behind us.
Another question was very much related to what you mentioned about experiencing the state of consciousness. So I also had some kind of things or eagerness to know about this, that different path provides an opportunity to have different experiences, spiritual experiences related to the consciousness. For an example, if somebody is only Kriya, so he may experience a different kind of spiritual experience with the consciousness, and somebody is an Adyatama, so he may experience a different intensity of spiritual experiences.
So therefore, what is the question?
The question is, if suppose there are two people, one person is working on Adyatama and another is through Kriya, so they may have a different spiritual experience of consciousness.
Of course, there are so many experiences of consciousness. If you read the Gorakhnath's books, he will take you through all of them. But that is one aspect of experiences of consciousness. But what about what is your life's expression now? While you are talking to me, what is your life's expression now? Let's talk about that. Is it one of peace? Or is it one of conflict? Because you may have all the experiences of consciousness you like, but your life could still be one where you are not at peace. Of course, there are in our scriptures yogis who have faltered on the path. Our scriptures are full of them. In moments of anger, things have been said and done which they have regretted. Supposing God came to you and said, I will give you 48 experiences of samadhi, each one different from the other, or a life of complete peace with what happens. But if I give you those 48 experiences of samadhi, your life, I don't know. It could be one of conflict, misery, I don't know. Disturbed mind, which one would you take? That is why they say, with peace of mind, all else follows. And that is not because you will get all else, because the me which wants is dissolved. When Maharaj said, I don't make disciples, I make gurus, he was not referring to gifting the disciples the various states of samadhi and consciousness which would make them gurus. His whole teaching was, abide in your being. Because if one lives that, then one is a guru, not in the sense of a guru versus a disciple, but guru as consciousness, which is the meaning of the word guru.
Then why it takes so much time to know ourselves if we are that?
That is the thinking mind which is asking that question. Isn't that beautiful? It's not in your control. That is itself not in your control. To even ask that question is not in your control. I'm sorry you had to come for just one talk, because there's one talk a month, but you're more than welcome to come back. It's an expensive proposition, but but you see, whether or not you come back is already decided. Your coming here had got nothing to do with you. The thought to come had got nothing to do with you. The universe had to conspire for you to be here. Someone had to invent the planes. You would not have been here. Are you grateful to the ones who invented the planes? Are you grateful to the website on which you booked the ticket? That someone made it, right? So you could book your ticket. Are you grateful to God that you had the financial means to come here? Can you not see the way the Lord consciousness, the source, operates to make things happen when they are meant to happen? It's quite awe-inspiring. And when they are not meant to happen, it won't happen. So this was meant to happen.
Can you please tell about your journey begins and the reason?
That will be another talk. Then you have to come back. If you come back, I'll tell you about it. It was a journey of what I call the accident of fate, because I had no interest in all this. It's quite interesting. I'm so grateful to God because not only of this journey, but even as a publisher of spiritual books, I've had such fascinating encounters and experiences and stories which would be nice to share at some point, because there's so much to learn. There's so much one has learned on the journey of life. So next time you come, we'll talk about it. Anything else you'd like to ask? You're going back today? And Kranti, what about you? Are you going back today? You took the train?
Yes. Mom and I took a bus.
Okay. It's about 5 hours?
5 hours.
Okay. 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 Anything you'd like to add or...
when you experience that peace, you obviously want that people around you should be at peace.
Yes.
But it becomes very difficult for this thing to percolate there with that rigid mindset already, especially with parents. We find them very, at least at that end stage, I want to see them happy, peaceful. And no matter how, like, I would like to make them understand this. Stop worrying them all. It doesn't happen.
Yes. All you can do is try. All you can do is try. But also, you needn't try and give peace to people. If one has a vibration of peace, then the others sense that. And that is what makes them peaceful. So it is not necessarily a process of words and telling people things. You can try, because your intentions are of course noble and pure, that you would like to explain things to people and parents or whatever.
Parents especially, because they are ill. I mean, they are suffering. I can see that unnecessary worries. And they need not be worried about it, anything wrong.
Sure. But all you can do is try. And the results are in God's hands. But yet, to be yourself at peace is a gift which you are giving. Just like the sun. The nature of the sun is to shine. And the sun does not make a distinction on who will receive its light and who will not. That is how, when one is peaceful, there is no differentiation of the people around you, because it's got nothing to do with them. Your light of peace is shining upon everything that you see and which is in your field. Everyone is on the same journey. We needn't try and control the journey of our parents either, or our children for that matter. If it is meant to happen, it will happen. Now, you all have come from so far for one talk of 1 hour. Supposing there were no words exchanged, supposing Ramakant didn't say a word right now, and there's no exchange of sound, because words are sound, would that love be any less, the love which brought you all here? So that is what is already there when it comes to your parents. So to try to make them understand, to try to convince them is fine at the level of the mind. But if that love is already there, then it's already fulfilled, you see. Then it is their destiny. Everyone has their own destiny. And everything has its own destiny. When my teacher was over at my home, my mother had written her second book on her spiritual awakening. And it was all very new to her, and she wanted to share her experiences. So she asked Rameshji that, I've written the second book, and now, you know, I really hope that those who experience what I've experienced can benefit from it. And he said, look, writing the book was your destiny. Now what happens to the book is the book's destiny. And that is why satsangs are so beautiful, because it is the love of truth. We are all here because we have that in common. Sat, sang. Because at some level, we all feel that what is going on is a play. That is the beauty of satsang. It's really a gift to have these opportunities. I considered 9 years with my teacher as a gift. Because why? Because here we are not coming with our masks. We are all leaving our masks at the door and coming. Because consciousness is speaking and consciousness is listening. So the value of satsang can never be overstated.
Along the path of Advaita, as little as I do understand it, I was recently seeing an interview of Papaji, and he was asked that, since to my understanding he is a teacher of understand the self, which I understand to be a Advaita. And he was asked that people have an experience when they sit with you, maybe of the self, and spoken earlier about certain level of consciousness. There is a certain experience. But he was asked that most of them, when they go back or go away over time, they lose that experience that they may have had. To which he responded, when he asked why is that, he responded saying, because maybe they were not worthy to hold on to the experience. So the question there was, what is, in this context, or generally speaking, when we experience certain things, whether in our sleep, or in the presence of a master, or in a certain spiritual place, but these are little moments that we experience. Whether it's sitting on the beach, maybe we are, I guess, trying, not trying, but you know, it comes and it goes. Maybe deeper or shallow experiences. What would he mean by not being worthy in this context? Just an open-ended question.
Frankly, I wouldn't know, and there must have been a context in which he said it. Because you see, nobody can not be worthy. We are all children of the same source. So where is the question of worth? But what context he said it in, I do not know. Now, I'll give you an example. Lakshmana Swami had said that in Arunachala, in and around Arunachala, Tiruvannamalai, supposing a person has not got an adequate amount of sattva, and he is mainly rajas and tamas, that mountain can do more harm than good. So if the attribute of sattva is not there, it's probably better for that individual not to be in that field. So worthy could be in such a context, which is not an individual worth, but the criteria and conditions based on the gunas, etc., etc. So I don't know in what context Papaji said, but the beauty of this teaching is peace of mind is everybody's birthright. Everybody is equally worthy. You had come with a friend last time, no? No. Oh, you came with Jigar. How was your new job?
I started that thing, but it's like it's not just very initial stage, so still not sure. So I don't have that clarity to be on this or probably
wait and watch. Wait and see what happens.
I just want one question. I've heard that there are so many people, those who are doing sadhanas in the Himalaya and all this thing. So what about that sadhana and what exactly we are? So is the particular part that we are doing sadhana and to reach in the path of enlightenment, if we are not doing anything else and we are just let the teaching get works on it. So what exactly, how could we reach this path?
Your daily living is your sadhana. Your daily living is your sadhana. Their choice is to be in the caves, that's their sadhana.
So is there any difference that they in their path and our path, not exactly?
What does it matter? Be concerned with your path.
How could we know that what is our path?
This is your path. The path you are walking on is your path. The challenges you face in the day, the situations you encounter, that is your spiritual practice. If you were not here, you would not be here. If you were not meant to be here, you would not be here. But you are here. If you were meant to give up everything and go and sit and meditate in a cave, that would happen.
Is there any difference that they analysis or they know their self is different than what we know ourselves that is different? Does their path is different? They are doing meditation, sitting in the cave and continuously and whole day they are doing meditation and we are doing our daily living works. Their experience is different, but they know about their self, they know about their enlightenment and what exactly we are doing or not doing over here. What is the difference between both of them?
Like you said, the experience is different. The question is the same. Who am I, where do I come from and where am I going?
Because many times it has been shown that those who do a lot of sadhana, they sit in it, so they are enlightened very fast. और जो लोग नहीं करते हैं या दे आर डूइंग देयर वर्क कि वो लोग मतलब वही एक मार्ग है वहां पे पहुंचने का ऐसा तो कुछ नहीं है.
आई डोंट थिंक सो बिकॉज फॉर एवरी वन अकाउंट यू नो इट हैज हैपेंड देयर विल बी थाउजेंड्स वेयर इट हैज नॉट हैपेंड इन स्पाइट ऑफ इयर्स एंड इयर्स ऑफ सिटिंग इन केव्स. योर कंसर्न शुड बी पीस ऑफ माइंड इन डेली लिविंग. व्हेन दैट बिकम्स द वन एंड ओनली फोकस ऑफ लाइफ एंड लिविंग, that becomes the spiritual practice.
कोई कहता है कि मैंने बहुत सारे साधना की.
अरे छोड़ो सब लोगों को. Forget about them. Just stay with your own journey and your own practice.
कोई भी disturb our mind, what exactly?
Of course it can disturb, because one starts comparing.
So my question which I asked, state of consciousness, that was the only question which is very much connected with this question. Because there are so many options available for the seeker. It's all very confusing.
Yeah.
One interview of a very old man I've seen on YouTube. So he was with Osho for many years. Mm. And Osho described his enlightenment experience as thousand suns shining and lightning of thousand watts and all those things. And he said that all these people with Osho at that time, they were so enamored with chasing that enlightenment experience. And but towards the end he said, even after so many years he realizes that nothing actually needs to happen. And it ended there. So it has to be different for different.
It would be lovely to have you back.
all of you all, but since he's come from far, he's got a special mention. I'm Kranti.